adjust your dial. This is not a test. We control the airwaves. This is The Last Horror Cast.
Hello everyone, welcome to episode number 24 of The Last Horror Cast. With you as always, my name is Scott.
And my name is Doug.
And Doug, I'm going to be honest. I'm going to make you tell the listeners what this week's episode theme is, because I still can't figure out how to say it in less than about 30 words. So if you can try to describe this in a sentence or less, go for it.
This week's subject matter is prequels, which are set at least 100 years before the original film, in which actors from the original series reprise their role or by playing an ancestor of the person who they were in the original film. I think that was 29 words. I'm pretty sure I got that in 29 words.
Pretty sure that was a run-on sentence, but it technically was a single sentence, so I'll allow it.
All right.
And what's funny is, when you first approached me with this idea, I just thought, like, okay, that's a really clever idea. Obviously, you have some movie that you really want to see, and this just happens to fit in with this. But how many movies could possibly fit into this category? But
I came up with two. I picked one of them and told you to pick the other one, and you screwed me and picked Alien versus Predator instead. So.
Yeah, so apparently this is an actual thing. You're right. You had found the two, and I don't know. I guess I'm just stubborn enough that I wasn't just going to automatically take your pick because you told me to. Plus, I feel like I need to redeem myself by picking some movies of my own and actually sticking to them. So I was going for it. I picked my own. And doing a little research on this, I found that this is actually a thing. There is a trope in television and film that's called identical grandson. Or identical grandparent.
Yeah.
That's the name of this, but there's several examples, and I'm going to quote right now from TVTropes.org, where they actually have a whole list of different movies, TV shows, magazines, comics that do this. But just to give a couple of film examples that maybe might be interesting to some of our listeners, they credit The Terminator as falling into this category, considering all of the T-800 models looked, and they say in parentheses, even smelled like different people. But in the sequels, somehow all of the T-800 Terminators look like Arnold. So they consider that. Back to the Future is a pretty common and well-known example.
Yeah.
Sarah Paxton in Return to Halloween Town plays both Marnie Piper and an ancestor. And the thing. I found that in a lot of these cases, it might be that one actor plays an ancestor and a descendant, but within a movie. It's rare that it's within a prequel. But another good example is Hellraiser Bloodline, which is the one that talks about how the Lament configuration was built. There's basically one actor that plays the guy who made it, as well as two of his descendants that are like multiple generations apart. But one guy plays like all of these. Let's see. I can't think of
there was a Nightmare on Elm Street film where makeupless Robert Englund played the father of Freddy Krueger as well, wasn't there?
Yeah, it's the scene where it's part five, where you see Freddy's mom being raped by the thousand maniacs. One of them is Robert Englund, so I suppose that counts too. And yeah, the one example you tried to get me to go with is Ginger Snaps Back, which you're right, that does fall perfectly into this. You've got, you know, it's 19th century ancestors of the two main characters from the other films, and the actors play the ancestors, so it's the exact same character. It says they even have the exact same names.
Yeah, that's an odd coincidence. It's a Canadian thing, eh? You're always, the ancestors just keep the same names generation after generation. If you look like your old ancestors, we name you after them. So,
let's see, the last couple that might be of interest are The Devil's Advocate They say the devil's true form as a fallen angel has the exact same face as his male offspring, justified since he is a divine being and his son is some word I can't pronounce. And then Roger Corman's 1963, The Haunted Palace, which is an adaptation of the case of Charles Dexter Ward, not only cast Vincent Price as Charles Ward and his warlock ancestor Joseph Kerwin, but also used the same actors to play both the men who burned Kerwin at the stake and their descendants whom he returned from the grave to take revenge upon. So, yeah, this is actually kind of a common thing and way more so than I would have expected. But knowing me, I, of course, had to take a very tangential definition to or, you know, approach to this theme. And what I've decided to go with is I chose AVP, Alien versus Predator, because in this film, not a spoiler, I would say, Lance Henriksen plays a character by the name of Charles Bishop Wayland, who is the designer of the Bishop android from Aliens and Alien 3, who is also played by Lance Henriksen. So,
now, are you sure about that?
According to the interwebs, there's not...
Did it say that anywhere in the movie?
In Alien versus Predator, no. But the... I believe it's in Alien 3 that there's a company that's the Wayland something corporation.
I accept that.
They're the ones that created Bishop and all of that. So it does technically work and it does technically make sense, although I will admit it's a tangent. But you approved it a week ago, so I'm sticking by it.
All right. And of course, I don't know if we've mentioned my pick yet, but the most obvious example is Tremors 4. In which Michael Gross plays Hiram Gummer, which is the great-grandfather of Burt Gummer from the original Tremors. And we learn where the Gummer family develops their obsession with guns. So don't act like you don't want to know that when you see that first Tremors film.
Yeah, well, and so when I was discussing this episode topic with my wife, I said, you know, yeah, because in Tremors 4, it's Michael Gross who plays the same character, and she goes, wait, like family ties Michael Gross? And I'm like, yeah,
yes, of course.
Isn't that exciting? Like, don't you want to see it now? Don't you want to sit and watch Tremors with me?
You know what, I went to his IMDb page and the gentleman has something like 113 acting credits, so I think we're doing him a bit of disservice when we act like he's only ever been in Tremors and the family ties series.
You know, I've never looked at his IMDb, but he strikes me as the kind of actor that probably did like a lot of theater and stage, but are you saying he's been in a lot of like films and TV as well?
I don't know. I just read the number at the top of his IMDb page. I didn't go much further into it.
Because, yeah, I literally recognize him from nothing else, and he's a pretty recognizable face and voice. So I don't know. Maybe he's not in my genre of choice, but yeah, regardless, I would say I enjoyed him in Tremors 4 and in Family Ties, so there you go.
It's been a while since I watched Family Ties, but I enjoyed it quite a bit back in like the mid-80s, so.
All right, well, let's, how do you feel about taking us through Tremors 4, and then I'll wrap up with AVP?
Sure.
All right.
All right, so Tremors 4 is set about 101 years before the original Tremors in the same valley. Perfection Valley is its name in Tremors. It's not named that yet at the time.
Spoiler!
Well, no, I haven't spoiled anything yet. Anyways.
That's an important scene when they paint the water tower.
Yes, it is, we'll get into it, but this is not just an introductory story. It's not just a flashback. It's also the entire town is playing an old version of the town that we see 100 years later. So at this time in 1889, it's a mining town, and there's a silver mine, which... we'll get into all the details maybe, but Graboids show up, as you might expect in any Tremors film, and the mine is forced to shut down. That's when Hiram Gummer, the owner of the mine, comes to town to find out what's going on. And he's a very well-mannered individual, speaks with a bit of a British tone to his name, has lived in the big city, doesn't ride a horse, all the things that would make you not very manly in the Old West. And he comes to town to find out why his mine is not producing. Is stranded there for quite some time because much of the town is deserted at this point. He initially decides that he's going to hire someone to kill the Graboids. He brings in, who knows what the guy's name is, played by Billy Drago.
Yeah, that's all that's important.
That's all that's important. He brings him in as a hired gun. He's unsuccessful. Hiram is going to leave town. He's had enough of this. But at the last minute, he returns and has basically recreates much of the fight from the original Tremors, but in Old West standards. So we get to see someone use a punt gun, which if you're not sure what that is, we'll discuss it. We get to see Graboids killed using old-timey saws. And we get a lot more racial humor than most people would consider appropriate.
Yeah, I was going to say, when you mentioned the fact that Gummer shows up in town and there's very few citizens left, we should say that basically what we have is a very small representation of the United Nations left in this town.
We really do.
I mean, it's got to be intentional, but the few citizens that there are there, and forgive me if this sounds like I'm being racially insensitive when I say this, but you have one white person, one Native American, one Mexican, the Chinese family, and I mean, they are over the top stereotypical in terms of playing up their races and their, you know, nationality. Like it's definitely yes. Not a hidden part
of
the film.
The Chinese family refers to the Graboids as dragons. The Mexican guy is still trying to get back to his old ranch. The Native guy has a cigar store Indian that he claims is a statue of himself.
Right.
And I mean, like, he tried, like, as if cigar store Indians are a source of pride for Native peoples.
Right.
I don't think that's an accurate representation of the way those are viewed. Interesting.
No, in fact, I think they're a pretty racist image to have around them, perfectly honest.
I think a lot of people do see them that way. I was surprised. I hadn't seen this movie in quite some time, and I was surprised by the blatant racism. And that, I mean, it's constant that they're bringing up the race of these people, and I'm not sure why. I mean, it makes sense. The Chinese family are clearly the descendants of the guy that ran the store in the original Tremors, right? They're establishing that family has been running that store location for however long. So okay, they have to be Chinese because he was Chinese apparently. But you don't need to have them constantly making very air quotes Chinese comments. It was just unnecessary.
Yeah, and I'm very carefully going to tiptoe through this part of the discussion because I don't want it to sound like we're making, you know, jokes or being insensitive, but yeah, it's just so in your face. And I mean, at one point they're discussing how to get rid of the Graboids and start talking about we need to go to town and get some more gunpowder, and maybe if we build a really big like firecracker, like that'll do it. And of course the Chinese guy, you know, speaks up. He's like, oh, I know how to make those.
Yeah,
like,
I know.
Every little comment like that just makes me cringe. I'm just like, Jesus, come on.
Now, I mean, the film deserves some credit because, yeah, you cringed, but you have to admit, you kind of chuckled at a lot of these, too.
Well, and
it does walk a fine line. None of the comments are mean in the way that
Well, and it's delivered. So... I don't want to say that at any point, like, racial jokes are okay, but, you know, there are definitely points when it comes to comedic films that... I don't know. There's a fine line where it's kind of like if somebody's in on the joke, like take a Mel Brooks film, for example. You know, you watch a movie like Blazing Saddles, which again has race all over it, but I don't necessarily walk away from that feeling like this is a racist movie. You know, it is, but it's intentionally trying to be in a humorous way. And so I don't know. I feel really wrong saying this, but I feel like there's almost like a time when it could potentially be acceptable as a form of intentional humor. Like I don't know, like I'm gonna dig myself into a hole here, so I'm just gonna stop.
I think what you're saying is that the film knows what it's doing and it's doing it on purpose, and therefore it's whether you personally, like you or any of the listeners, like it, at the end of the day it's not racist because they're not suggesting that all Chinese people know how to make firecrackers. They're just they know that it's a stereotype and they're having a little bit of fun with that stereotype.
Right. Yeah. In the same way you might watch, you know, a Chris Rock stand-up routine. Like, it's a similar kind of.
So, I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think very many people are going to see Tremors 4 and be offended by the way race is portrayed on film. There are definitely going to be some people who are more sensitive than me who are a little less comfortable enjoying it.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah. That's a good way to put it, yeah.
It is one of those ones where you're sort of like, oh, you're not supposed to do that, but you do sort of move on. You know? And I, you know, and I, the one race that's not portrayed, might I throw out, is African-Americans. And I think maybe there's a reason for that. Maybe it's because it's a lot harder to make jokes about how they were treated at that time.
Yeah, that could be.
Which, by the way, it should be just as hard to make jokes about Native Americans because they were treated arguably worse or as bad. But, you know, it's not as culturally, we're not as culturally sensitive to that point, generally speaking. So,
yeah, no, I think we made our point, and I would say let's move on before we say something stupid. But
no chance of that.
I can say that, you know, watching this movie, it like right off the bat, it just made me kind of think like, oh man, I kind of want to go be like, you know, an Old West prospector now. Like this just kind of looked fun.
It did. And every now and again, where there was a lot of moments where I'm just like, oh man, people in the Old West were dumb for not actually doing this. Like when they go out, one of the jokes is when they go out to the mine, it's a, like, you know, a couple of days ride from the town. And, you know, the first joke is that Gummer tries to ride his bike. And it's like, you can't ride a bike. You have to learn how to ride a horse like a real man does. And it's like, yeah, that's kind of funny. But when he gets out there, they're all like laying down their packs on the ground and he's hanging up a hammock.
Yeah.
And they're all kind of making fun of him. And I'm going, that seems genius to me. Like, I've slept in a hammock and I've slept on the dirt with nothing underneath me. I'd rather sleep in a hammock. It seems way more comfortable.
Well, as he says, it's better for the back.
It's better for the posture, he says.
Yeah, right.
But why the hell didn't every cowboy carry a hammock in the Old West? That would have been, like, they're not that hard to carry. And
not enough trees. They had to find a special camp to be able to do that.
I guess that's true. But I thought that was pretty funny.
Okay, so I'm going to refer to you for kind of this next little chunk of discussion, because I will admit I'm not a Tremors franchise devotee.
Okay.
I know I saw the first one, but it was probably when I was in junior high, and I think it was on TV on like TBS in the middle of a Saturday afternoon, and I, you know, caught it in the background. So I know what I know of Tremors is it's in a desert, there's giant worms, and there's a Kevin Bacon. That's pretty much the extent of it. So this was the kind of movie that as I'm watching it, I just kept thinking like, man, I really should have watched part one right before I did this, because you could just tell like they're setting up all of these jokes.
Yeah. The plot is almost the same. They don't hire a gunslinger in the original Tremors because it's set in 1990, which would be a bit ridiculous. But it is very much small town in this valley. Graboids show up. The locals have to get together and fight them off.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but there were just so many little things where you could tell this is kind of one of those wink and nods to the audience. And it's like, hey, did you ever wonder why this happened? Like, now we're going to give you that. Like the repainting of the water tower. Obviously, that was significant. A scene where they give Michael Gross at the very end, they have this like Old West gunpowder powered, like, you know, rotating Gatling gun. Like,
yeah,
I didn't, that scene was very out of place for me, but I was like, okay, obviously there's a scene with this kind of gun in the other Tremors movies, and this is setting that up. Or just, you know, so many little things like that. So I wanted to know from your perspective as a, you know, person who owns the Tremors Attack Pack, as you admitted.
Not admitted. Like, I'm proud of the fact.
So how much did that play up for you, and how much did you enjoy this as a kind of catchy little tongue in cheek fanboy movie?
I definitely think this is the kind of movie that is made for fans of the original, and I'm a fan of the original, and it really worked on a lot of levels for me. There are a lot of things, and I, you know, the guns in general, I mean, the Gummer character in the original Tremors is a gun nut. He lives up on the hill. He's got this fully reinforced basement. He's got tons of guns. He's, you know, a real mental case. Just him and his wife kind of live in this fully like fenced in area. So we see how this Gummer character, not like we see everything. We see how he develops his love for guns. We even see where he's building his house is meant to be where the other house stands 100 years later. So it's like they've passed it down generations to generation of that.
Okay.
But we see that engine, that tractor, that steam engine that's pulling people around town in this one. That mirrors they use a tractor in the first one to get around because the Graboids can't get at it from underground. So we see them kind of using that same methodology right here. Like I mentioned earlier, the Chinese family are clearly meant to be the descendants of the guy who still owns the store in 1990. The store kind of looks the same from the outside, almost like it could be the same building that's been maintained this whole time, or maybe it's been rebuilt to look the same.
I was going to say, is it still made of canvas tents or plastic tarps?
It's still made of a wood floor because the Graboids can still come up through it at that point. So, you know, it does have electricity in the modern films. But, yeah, I mean, I definitely got a kick out of seeing the whole town that is just meant to mirror, you know, here's what this town would have looked like 100 years ago. Very much like Back to the Future, where they use the sort of the same set, but they resurface it to
right.
make it look like it's the 50s or the 80s or 2000 and whatever. And I got a kick out of that.
Yeah, I always find it kind of fun when movies do that, you know, especially something that I am a big fan of. And you'll see a prequel or you'll see a flashback and they kind of set up this little thing that, you know, ends up building on something way later. A TV show that's just perfect for that is if you ever watched Futurama.
Yeah,
I know isn't on anymore, but I've got all the DVDs of that and love watching it. And that's such a smart show for doing the same thing. And over the years and over the seasons, you'll get these little episodes that are some flashback to something that happened 3 seasons ago, and they'll recreate the scene, but from a different angle. And now you'll see like, oh, that was there. Like, and it just keeps building on itself. And it's very smart. And I feel like little things like that are a great way for a director to, you know, basically thank the fans or give the fans a little Easter egg for, you know, being fans. And so,
yeah
I felt kind of sad that I did not get to pick up on that. Cause like I said, it's just so obvious that there's that kind of stuff just all over this movie.
Even the water tower, you mentioned that they're sort of repainting it to say Perfection Valley at the end of this one, when they update the name from Rejection Valley, which seems like a no-brainer not to name your town Rejection.
Right.
But, I mean, that water tower plays a significant role in the battle with the Graboids in the final film. You know, it's good to see sort of even it has its ancestor 100 years earlier. I got so much joy out of that. And I guess if you're not a fan of the original Tremors, which is, it's a bit ridiculous to not be, quite honestly, but, you know, if you haven't seen it recently, I would rewatch it before watching this one. I don't think you need to watch Tremors 2 or 3 to fit into this one, but it's still a good idea.
Yeah, I think I could even give that recommendation blind, because without having seen Tremors 1 in 20 years, I could still probably say that there's enough here in Tremors 4 that it's going to play off of it, and I think you'll heighten your experience quite a bit. If you're going to like one of them, you'll like both, I would think. But
I definitely think so, yeah.
And so did, I mean, this one was clearly a comedy and very tongue-in-cheek, very, you know, wink-wink, you know, to the audience. But, like, I do remember when the first one came out, at least thinking that it was pretty scary or intense or, you know, serious at least. But was it the kind of thing that even back then was pretty tongue-in-cheek and they knew that they were making a ridiculous movie about giant worms?
It had Kevin Bacon in it.
Well, so did Friday the 13th.
Yeah. And, no, I mean, I definitely, the original is a little more intense, a little more serious than this one, but it's still having lots of fun with it. And it has lots of, like, sort of jokes that are made. I don't want to try to quote a joke when I didn't watch the movie recently, but there's definitely moments of humor in it. But I think it did play up the intensity a little more. And I think anytime you're at part 4 of a series and, okay, they're getting ready for their final battle with the Graboids. At some point, you have to learn to live with the fact that nobody's nervous anymore about who's going to win this fight.
Right.
We know all the main characters are going to live through this. We know they're going to kill those monsters. It's all about how they're going to do it. And, you know, I think this film nails it. I mean, you're like, well, what can they possibly bring out? And when Hiram opens up that punt gun, which for people who don't know what a punt gun is, I had to look it up and make sure this was a real thing. But it is just literally a giant shotgun that is significantly larger than a human being. I don't know what these would be used for in the real world, but they do exist. And apparently, like, they built this one just for this film, and it weighed something like 95 pounds. So I don't know what you're supposed to shoot with a 95-pound gun.
A rhino, maybe?
Yeah, I don't... I can't even conceive. Obviously, a human being wouldn't be expected to carry that. They would be have to be sort of mounted the way it is in this film. They have it in a trailer kind of thing. But
yeah, you know, it would... it looked like... I mean, the muzzle or the barrel of it looked like a flagpole. But what was so comical about it is that the handle and the trigger didn't seem any larger than like a handgun. So you had this tiny little grip and this little trigger on this just gigantic cannon. And I mean, it was effective. So it took a while to load, but it was an effective
hit. And I mean, like, again, conceptually, because this is a real type of gun, I mean, yeah, they had these guns that the handles would have had to have been to fit a human hand, right?
Right.
It has to be usable, but it's it is comically large. It looks like the kind of thing they made up for the movie. I couldn't believe it when I realized it was real, and when I Googled it and found images of actual, like, human beings, like old black and white photos of guys holding these types of guns, I'm like, what is going on?
Well, and especially when you've got
I don't know what they could be for.
When you've got a weenie like Michael Gross trying to use it too, like, that just obviously adds to the humor of the whole thing. But
yes, and he does. I got to say, you know, again, you're not as familiar with the first film, but in that first film, he plays a really strong, badass survivor man type character, the kind of guy who's, you know, keeps rations in the house so that if the nuclear war comes, he'll survive, him and his family. For him to turn around and play this big of a weenie in this movie, and I can't believe we're using the word weenie, but it's the best possible.
It's true. I mean, there's no better way to describe him in here, and it's perfect. Yeah,
he does it so well. And I mean, when he's interacting with Billy Drago, and, you know, Drago tells him to get a gun that suits him, and when he pulls out the gun, it's this little tiny thing like a woman would carry in her purse. And Drago's just staring at him like, what the fuck is wrong with you? It's like, it's amazing.
Yeah, so that brings me to the other really big point. Well, actually, real quick before I do that, still comparing this to Tremors 1. My impression, and maybe this was just from advertising or being a kid and not having a real, you know, strong memory of it, but did the worms themselves also get bigger in the other, like, as over the time, over the years? Because the ones here in Tremors 4 seemed really small to me. And is that kind of the size they were in the other films too, or?
I feel like the end for, so in Tremors 4, I didn't really address this in my plot summary, and I apologize for that, but we sort of meet baby Graboids that have just hatched, and we actually learn how the mine accidentally sprung a hot spring, which the hot water ran over the eggs and hatched them. They actually get into a great deal of detail about that, which is funny.
Mm-hmm.
But we do see the baby
people for three movies now have just been dying to know, I'm sure.
Well, but you don't understand. The Graboids through Tremors 2 and 3, the Graboids continue to evolve into more complex beings. So here we're back to the original Graboids, and we do get to see the baby version. And I think the Graboids towards the end of this film are about the same size as the ones from the original.
Okay.
In the original, they start out that size. So
I gotcha.
They're fully grown at the start of the film.
So looks like there's a Tremors 5 also. Is that out yet?
Oh, yes, in Tremors. Oh, yeah. Tremors 5 is Michael Gross reprises his original role as Bert Gummer, and he is called to team up with Jamie Kennedy to fight Graboids in Africa.
Oh, wow.
I will tell you this. If you enjoyed Michael Gross's performance in this film, check out Tremors 5. Because guy is still doing his thing, and he, I mean, I don't know how old he is. He must be in his 60s now. And when you see a 60-year-old man in a cage wearing nothing but his underwear, drinking his own pee, you can't help but enjoy a film like that and respect an actor that still goes to that level.
Sounds like every Thursday night for me.
All right, well, no comment.
No, so the other thing that I wanted to get into in terms of discussing this movie is what was hands down my favorite part of the whole thing, and that is Billy Drago as Black Hand Kelly. Yeah. Because
You learned his name, I just called him Billy Drago.
Because, I mean, Billy Drago is one of those actors where he's been in so many things, and you can pick him out from little things here and there. The only other thing that I can ever remember, by name that he's in is that one Takashi Miike episode of Masters of Horror Imprint. I believe he was in that one. And that's a incredibly memorable little bit of film.
Yeah, that was very disturbing and upsetting.
Right.
But I feel like he's one of those guys where I feel like if you go back and watch like action and sci-fi movies from like the 80s and 90s, he's going to be in all of them. Like just pick one and watch it. He'll be there. He's the bad guy that our hero has to fight before he gets to the main bad guy. I feel like that's always who he is.
Yeah, but he's so great. Like I love him, and especially in this role. And he shows up with the very, typical kind of black hat Western cowboy that comes riding in. He was the gunslinger who, is all talk and, is super badass and just playing it up so thick. And I mean, first scene where he's sitting there in the inn and he's, kind of negotiating his fee and whether he's capable of doing this and showing off the gun skills. Like I felt like I could have been watching any John Wayne movie ever, and this character was peeled straight out of it. But then as he continues to go, it's just like all I wanted was more scenes of him in there, because on the one hand he's so over the top and ridiculous, and he would throw out these jokes that would just make you groan and were just so terrible, but then he would play it off with just these completely badass macho, manly scenes, and it was just great. Like he stole the entire movie for me. And this is after I just got done talking about how great Michael Gross is. So these two together are just what make the film.
Yeah. I love the interactions between the two, because it's a classic setup. You have your big manly character who's tough and rumble and has all this fight experience. And then you've got the sort of sleazy, slimy businessman-y guy who's, not able to handle, like I say, it's a movie set in the Old West, and Michael Gross can't ride a horse. And he says, "Well, if I ever need this skill again, I'm sure I can hire a tutor." Who the fuck says that in 1889 Old West? So to watch that interaction, and I mean, the performances are key, because it could be cheesy and ridiculous, but instead it's just fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't know. I guess a real minor spoiler here, I was really bummed out to see that Billy Drago doesn't make it to the end of the film.
Okay.
Not only did it surprise me, but I was like, oh man, like he was kind of like becoming our little hero. But yeah, I was not expecting them to, even in a movie with giant worms and dirt dragons, I was not expecting them to actually kill off characters, and especially not him. So that was kind of a little shock.
I guess maybe it's because I've seen the film before. Maybe it's because I'm more familiar with the series. I wasn't caught off guard when it happened. I feel like when you bring in the badass guy with the guns, he's got to be killed off so that Michael Gross has the opportunity to step up into that role.
Well, and that's true too. You know what Michael Gross becomes later, which to me, he was just the weenie from Philadelphia.
Yeah. Okay. Do you think people from Philadelphia get pissed off when they see this movie? Because those guys are, that whole city is full of people who are ready to fight you on a moment's notice. And it blows my mind that they would be willing to have a character from Philadelphia be such a weenie. Because I'd be concerned that, somebody from Philadelphia has one too many beers and just drives down to the studio and starts punching people.
I don't know. It was 150 years ago. Like, maybe they think they've evolved since then. I've never been to Philly. I don't know anybody from Philly. I doubt too many of them were too outraged by the Tremors 4 representation.
Well, we'll have to find out one day. If we have any, if we have any listeners from Philadelphia, by all means, call in and try to tone down your language because I know how you people speak. But let us know what you thought of your representation.
Well, all right then. Okay. Any other Tremors 4 kind of talk? I feel like we did that somewhat justice, but I feel like there's a lot we left out. But it's the kind of thing where unless we were just gonna go plot point by plot point, it's kind of hard to really hash.
Yeah, no. I mean, I really feel like this is the kind of movie where it's the joke is that this is the Tremors story being retold 100 years earlier, and the one actor they could get back from the original is learning how to become the character that he was in that movie. If that sounds interesting to you, this is a huge recommend. You know, when Kelly shows up to town and they say, "You're Kelly?" Yeah. Black Hand Kelly, and he holds up his hand with the black glove on it. If that sounds like the kind of movie you want to watch, then this is the movie for you. Like, it's how great was the scene where he goes, they're challenging him to demonstrate his gunner skills, and he's like, "Kid, throw me an apple."
Yeah.
He's like, "You want it up in the air? No, throw it right at me, right at my chest, right at me." The kid throws it to him, and he just catches it and starts eating it. And the movie has just that right level of meta humor to it where Hiram actually goes, "Well, I think many of us were expecting you to shoot the apple." Like he's right. Calling it out. Like not only us, but the people watching the movie really thought you were going to shoot that apple. Why didn't you shoot it?
There were many scenes like that it was very clear that they had tongue-in-cheek and knew what the audience was expecting. And they still gave it to you, but they just twisted it just enough to be like, "Ha-ha, see?"
See how clever we are?
Right. Yeah, I would say that as a, general non-Tremors fan, or just, you know, as a someone ignorant to the Tremors franchise, more or less, like, I sat down watching to watch this and was admittedly a little apprehensive. Part 4 of a mostly obscure franchise is never usually going to be a good thing. And I don't know, just did not have super high expectations or super high hopes and ended up having a pretty damn good time watching it. And it did a good enough job to where I'll probably never watch Tremors 2 or 3 or even 5 for that matter. But I'll definitely put Tremors 1 on my, you know, not too far off future to-do list because it made me want more and had enough time, or I had enough good enough time that I will be doing that. So I guess that would be my recommendation. If you like Tremors or just like kind of fun, stupid Saturday afternoon movies, like this is a pretty good fit for you, I would think.
Yeah. And I mean, just so people are aware, when we discuss the Tremors, we're not dismissing the TV series that came out. We do recognize that there was that there. I didn't get a chance to watch any of it to prepare for the show. But
I thought that was still in production. Is that that's out
that's
yet?
The new one. No, there was an old one, I think, and now there's a new one as well. The old one that came out, I think it came out before this movie, but after the other sequels, because I think there was a bit of a gap. I'm not sure exactly.
Huh.
But, and I believe Michael Gross did play a part in that series. So.
Yeah, I'm actually looking at his IMDb right now because I'm curious as to whether he was in that or not. I do like that his top 4 credits for what he's known for are Family Ties, Tremors, Tremors 3, and Tremors 4.
Well, he wasn't in 2.
So that's why.
Tremors 2 took, like, I believe the actor's name is Fred Ward, and they took his character. And he went on the road to fight graboids that were showing up in other places. So.
Yes, he did play Burt Gummer in the 2003 TV series.
So it's really a shame that that's not still on the air.
Yeah, and so what's the news of the new one? I heard at one point that they're actually getting Kevin Bacon back for it. I don't know if that's just a rumor.
I've heard that talk
thing.
I don't know, but I mean, if they could get Kevin Bacon back, that's amazing. That's just a take my money moment. If Kevin Bacon comes back to the Tremors franchise, I'm in. But honestly, at this point, even if there was just a Tremors 6, as long as Michael Gross shows up, I'll show up.
Yeah, that's fair. There's nothing on the Kevin Bacon future production filmography, but who knows? But yep, so recommend for me. I think pretty obviously recommend from you, I would think.
Yeah, definitely. like I say, it's not a film that's necessarily going to be for everyone, but if you think it might be for you, it definitely is for you.
Yeah, yeah, and I think you're going to, like you said, you're going to know by the time you get done listening to our discussion whether this is your movie or not, and you're probably right. All right, so let's shift gears here just a little bit and discuss my pick for this week, AVP, Alien versus Predator.
Versus Cube. Oh, sorry, they didn't put that in the title.
I see what you did there. So I knew very little about this movie going in. I had not seen it before this episode. Had you seen this one before? Or
no. It was one of those ones I've been waiting for a long time. But
you're welcome?
No. I had been waiting for it for a long time in 2004 when it came out.
Oh.
But between the previews and the reviews and just the negative feedback from fans of both the Alien series and the Predator series, I ended up staying away from it. So
yeah,
it took me this long to get back to it. And go ahead.
I was just going to say, you're right, that it did get a lot of really negative buzz. I mean, it's a film that came out in 2004, so 12-year-old movie. And yes, I very distinctly remember a lot of people being excited about it when it came or was coming about, and then just very quickly getting disappointed. But I mean, it's still got pretty good reviews, and I'm going to say that there are things that I think are redeemable about it, and so I'm not going to just completely come down and trash it. But I absolutely see where anybody who was disappointed by this or gave it a negative review, I think it's completely justified. But we'll get into that as we kind of get into the specifics of the discussion itself. But basically, our story here is you've got Lance Henriksen, who is playing Charles Bishop Wieland, who is a multi-billionaire, who is also, we find out, terminally ill and close to dying. But he has his own satellite up in orbit that is kind of monitoring various things on Earth. I don't even know what the hell it's doing. But one day he gets this ping from the research station saying that there's this abnormality and this unknown heat source or heat signature down in Antarctica. So he assembles the team of some of the best and brightest and most capable explorers and scientists and engineers and everything else around the world and puts them together as this team because he basically wants to go explore this discovery and be the first to actually claim it and kind of have his legacy that he can leave his mark on the world before he dies. The research team has basically figured out that what they have there buried beneath the ice in Antarctica is this strange pyramid. And some of the architects that they bring in are saying that, it resembles Cambodian architecture, it resembles Mayan architecture, and they're not really sure, who built it. And they kind of all decide, this is intriguing enough that they're going to go down. They get to the research base, they kind of go underground to see what this pyramid is. And basically, the kind of reveal is that the predators have been coming to Earth for hundreds of years and were actually on Earth at some of the, dawn of civilization. And they were the ones that taught the Egyptians and taught the Mayans and taught all of these ancient, humans how to build these pyramids and these great temples and structures. And they were doing so because these were their training and hunting battlegrounds. And every 100 years, the predators come back to Earth to hunt what they consider to be the best and most dangerous game out there. And in this case, it happens to be the aliens from the Alien franchise. So this one pyramid that's buried below Antarctica is just one example of this. And we see that the predators basically have a queen alien chained up in the basement of this pyramid, who's kind of in a weird kind of suspended hibernation. And every 100 years, she wakes up, starts laying some eggs. The predators come and hunt the aliens. And basically, if the predators win, it's a great victory for them.
they leave, come back 100 years later. If the aliens win, well, then the Predators are basically big cheaty faces who just blow up the pyramid. And that's kind of what this Antarctica pyramid was. It's now buried beneath the ice because apparently at some point they lost. I don't know. That was the impression I got, that that's how this one got buried. But yeah, so it just so happens that coincidentally, this research team is going into the pyramid right at the time that the Predators happen to be showing up, and right at the time that the alien queen is waking up, and they just happen to be caught in the crossfire of this big fight, basically.
Yeah.
Now, I will say that pretty much my two-sentence synopsis of what this movie is actually all about is somebody decided that they wanted to have this really kick-ass action movie about two superhuman creatures fighting it out in this awesome, like, obstacle course, double dare style maze. And they had the idea, they had the script, all they needed was what the two creatures were going to be. And somebody said, hey, you know what's popular? Aliens and Predators. Okay, let's use them. And then somebody else said, hey, wait, don't you realize that, like, this doesn't follow the continuity of any Predator movie or any alien movie ever, and just kind of completely throws everything you know about those out the window? And our first guy in this scenario said, fuck you, sit down, we're making the movie. And that's how this got made.
Okay. I think we're going to end up in the same spot, but my interpretation of how this got made is fans really wanted an Alien versus Predator. Fans wanted to watch aliens fight Predators. And then the studio probably came along somewhere along the line and said, well, we have to have our main characters be humans. So we need aliens versus predators versus humans. Somebody come up with an idea how to make that work. Now, anybody with a brain in their head says the humans go into outer space and they stumble across a planet with aliens and predators on it. But they didn't hire anybody with a brain in their head. They hired somebody else who thought maybe both of those come to Earth, which doesn't necessarily make any sense, which we're going to have to come up with a very convoluted backstory involving flashbacks to ancient civilizations in order to tell us why they're there. But, you know, whatever. We've already made our decision. Let's move on.
Right.
And
as yeah. As my first defense of this film, I would say that if you can take off the, you know, the nerd hat and put away the nerd rage of this is not, you know, true to aliens, this is not true to predators, and just accept that these are just two random alien species, the movie works, and I think it's pretty fun. I did have a hell of a good time watching this. Although, yes, every time they show an alien or a predator, it's like, well, that's not what these creatures are like. And so you kind of just have to distance yourself. And I think your enjoyment of this film is going to be whether or not you can do that. If you can, I think there's some fun to be had here. If you can't, then yeah, this movie is a train wreck.
And see, I'm going to disagree with you. My experience watching this was very much like my experience watching World War Z when that movie came out.
Okay.
I sat down, I had an idea in my head of exactly what I wanted. 5 minutes in, I realized, I ain't getting that. That's not what this is. So turn that off. You're not here to watch the movie that you want to watch. You're here to watch some other movie. I have no clue what's coming because this isn't true to the material that came before it. So I have no way of predicting what's going to happen. Now I'm just watching a different movie. Does it work? And my response in both cases is no. It turns out the movies just aren't very good. If this movie didn't have aliens and predators in it, I think it would be completely 100% forgettable. I think my main complaint with this movie is that nothing in it seems to matter.
Yeah, you're right.
So yeah, like, so we taught you. You mentioned Lance Henriksen is the guy who designed the Bishop robot from the Alien franchise. And I sort of made a joke earlier and said, are you sure? Because I don't think they mention that in this movie.
No, they don't.
The truth is, there's no real reason for him to be in this movie, Lance Henriksen to be in this movie, other than he's a recognizable face, and they're hoping people will do, oh, I remember him, right? That's all they're hoping for. But it could have been any other character. You know,
we have our main character, I forget the name, the girl who's the guide, I forget her name, but you know, we meet her, and it's like the scene where we meet her at the beginning is just so ludicrous and insane. So she's climbing an ice fall, you know, freehand style, by herself. I'm never explained why. We don't know if she's there as part of a job or whether she's there on some sort of vacation, but she takes a cell phone call halfway up.
Right.
is that supposed to, if that's supposed to be a joke, then the humor in this film doesn't work. If I'm supposed to believe that this is what this person would actually do, then no, I'm just not going to.
And here in Illinois, they've passed a law that you can't be on your cell phone in a car because it's unsafe, but
exactly
on a mountain, go for it.
and then the worst part of that whole thing is then she's like, well, you know, I can't come meet you guys because it's going to take me a week to get back to civilization. And just as she's reaching the top of the mountain, because she keeps climbing while she takes her phone call, she doesn't even stop. You hear the guy go, yeah, we took that into consideration. And he's standing at the top of the hill waiting for her. I don't groan out loud when I'm at home alone watching a movie very often, but like, what the hell am I watching here? Okay. So no. I actually think some of the concepts of the movie are decent. The idea, okay, predators, based on their mythology, they hunt things and they intentionally try to hunt things for, like, it's a sport to them, right? So conceptually, they want to hunt aliens because aliens, the xenomorphs, are these ultimate killing machines. And if you can hunt them, then that makes you a really badass. Not a terrible idea. No. They put them on Earth. Okay, a bit ridiculous. All the stuff about the flashbacks, it's ridiculous, but whatever. That's our setup. I'll give you the setup because you want us in this pyramid. You want us in the cube with the characters being chased by both. Fine. But there's no tension to this film whatsoever. None of the characters are remotely developed. The presentation of the predators is ludicrous. I mean, when the final predator teams up with our main character and they become friends and they're like running off into the sunset together, and I mean that as literally as possible, it's like how a cartoon would end. It's like, Jesus, what am I watching right now? And again, conceptually, the notion that the predator develops respect for her because she's able to defend herself against the aliens, that is not only an interesting idea, it's also consistent with the concept of what a predator is. If she proves herself to be a badass, that moment where he marks her could be pretty cool. But the problem is, we get these weird moments where it's almost like the predator is a deaf and dumb person and they're trying to communicate, where he's trying to explain to her what a bomb is and stuff. That makes this feel like some sort of like a bad Saturday morning cartoon version of a predator instead of an actual character. So it's, yeah, like, why would you want to impress this guy? He's kind of a fucking loser.
Maybe he was the one, maybe that's why they're at Earth, is like they actually do this on multiple planets and like all of the reject predators have to go to Earth. It's like, oh man, I didn't make the cut.
here's another complaint that just popped into my head is, so every 100 years these three predators come down as like a rite of passage to hunt these aliens, right?
Right.
What about every other fucking predator? What's their rite of passage? Why do these three get chosen? If we're going to have all this backstory, don't you maybe explain why those three that get sent? It seems to be three each time, right? It's three that come in this film and three in the flashback. So
there's only the three guns in the pyramid.
Yeah. So how do they pick those three? Did they win some sort of other hunting tournament on another planet? Or, you know, again, if you're going to give me this much flashback, it has to make sense. And there's no indication. It's almost like there's only three predators born every 100 years or something, but that doesn't seem to be the case because there's a whole predator society that flies these ships in.
Yeah, you end up seeing a whole shitload of predators there at the end.
And again, like, that could have been a really neat moment if predators were cool up until that time. But I mean, having a fucking asshole throughout the film and then having a whole bunch of assholes show up at the end doesn't make me interested in seeing them, you know?
Well, and that you're right too, that could have been a pretty interesting way to go about the film if you had a larger number of both, because also in one of the predator, or in one of the flashbacks, you see the predator standing on top of the pyramid and there's just, you know, swarms of aliens and xenomorphs crawling up the side of it. And I was thinking, like, man, if they go to that point, like, that's pretty cool, but get what, seven, six, five? I mean,
it makes no sense. We see that one where they're swarming, But we clearly see that the way they create the aliens is that the humans are used as sacrifices.
Right.
And they have that room where they lay on the beds and their face huggers are put on them. And there's clearly like six beds there. So that's how many you get, which, okay, fine. Like you would think that there would be predators who are using this as a hunting tournament or a game of whatever kind would want a limited number. But then why in the flashback are there so many? How does that make any sense?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why wouldn't this pyramid just be sealed? And you have the hunt and the predators either make it out or they don't. Like, it's contradicting itself. And that's where I'm like, okay, it's fine that they're making up their own mythology, but they're contradicting the mythology within the context of the film.
Well, and you're right. And I mean, I tried not to nitpick this because, you know, I don't...
I tried to, but I couldn't stop.
I generally don't, you know, make it a point to be, you know, too terribly negative during movies, especially ones that I know that I have to watch from beginning to end for the show. But yeah, like as you're even talking, like you're bringing up a lot of little kind of nitpicky points that I don't think are wrong or are invalid. And, you know, a couple others that are coming to mind now are, you know, the example that, you know, you said, why don't they just seal the pyramid? Well, the pyramid is sealed. Like that was the point when they, as soon as they walked in and like grabbed those guns, like that did seal them in. And also, you know, if they come every 100 years, like, well, does that mean that Antarctica, I don't, and maybe it does, but like, does Antarctica refreeze over like every 100 years? Because that took quite a bit of an effort to, get down to this pyramid. Like, how do they come back? And, or is this happening multiple places? Like, yeah, it just, the continuity, and it just doesn't seem to make sense within its own logic and its own world that they're setting up.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I guess that I kind of approached it very much as a check your brain at the door and just, I hate that expression because I feel like that's kind of just a cop out. But I do kind of feel like in this case, it's true. And where if you want to pick apart the theme or the plot, it's ripe for that. And if you want to complain about, you know, all of the, you know, flaws in terms of aliens don't act this way, predators don't look this way, whatever, then yeah, there's tons of that kind of stuff there. But if you just wanted to see a movie with, like you said, Cube that has, you know, aliens and predators fighting each other, well, this kind of provides that. And for an hour and a half of just kind of stupid sci-fi action, I think it worked.
Okay. I think we just disagree on that. Like for me, I tried to turn my brain off and tried to just enjoy it on that level. And I mean, really, this is a Paul W.S. Anderson film. I think you either like his films or you don't. And I guess I don't.
And I think that for the most part, and I'm not trying to disagree with you at any point. I think every point that you're making is completely valid. And I think that the big difference really does come down to whether or not you're able to just sit back and say, okay, fine. But yeah, I'm not terribly familiar with a lot of Paul Anderson stuff. Although, you know, what I know him as is, you know, the Resident Evil movies. And I know
that's
exactly what
I'm thinking about.
Right. And I know he's done a lot of other things, but that's kind of what he stands out as in my mind. And I think those fall into this exact same camp. As if you've ever played a Resident Evil game, then you watch one of those Resident Evil movies and your nerd rage just goes out of control because it's like, well, that's not authentic. They didn't do that. Like, this doesn't make any sense. This doesn't follow continuity. And if you can get past that and just watch it as a, you know, pseudo zombie film, like even there, it doesn't really make sense even within itself because, well, it's been a long time since I've seen one of the Resident Evil movies, but yeah, I think those all fall into this same kind of category. So you're right. I think that's a flaw within Anderson more so than it is a flaw within this movie, but it's just kind of has his touch all over it.
Yeah. And like I said, one of the things that like where the movie completely lost me, because I was having a little bit of fun with it when you're watching the human characters, you know, as the shifting of that pyramid every once in a while, and you know, we know that they're carrying the guns that the predators are there to get, so we know the predators are coming for them, and we can see the aliens being born. So, you know, I'm having a little bit of fun with it at that point in the film. It really lost me in the scene where the predator and the human character decide to kind of team up.
Yeah.
And, you know, it would have been fine if they sort of Freddy versus Jason did, where it's like the humans go, well, we're going to root for that guy because we think he's the lesser of two evils. Mm-hmm. But when the Predator decided, I'm going to be on her team, that's when I was like, no, can't do it, because she'd done nothing to earn that yet.
Yeah, and you know, it's a good point, too, because as I was kind of discussing this movie with other people and was kind of nitpicking it, kind of pulling it apart, like, you know, the response that I got a couple of different times was, well, what do you expect? It's a movie called blank versus blank. Like, how good could it possibly be? And I said, well, actually, there's this little movie called Freddy versus Jason, which in my mind is a stellar film. And that is the kind of movie where you can take two established franchises, blend the two of them in such a way that you stay faithful and true to both storylines, and make a good film at the same time that not only was entertaining to watch if you're not a fan, but also satisfied the fanboys of both franchises. And so I said, it can be done, and can be done really well and successfully.
Yeah.
So the problem with this movie, Alien versus Predator, was not that, well, it's a versus, therefore it's automatically going to suck. Like, the problem was they didn't try to do that. There was something missing here.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, the whole versus concept has been around as long as they've been making movie series. There's actually a reference really early in this film. One of the guys is watching an old black and white movie, and if you're enough of a geek like me, you recognize that he's watching Frankenstein Meets the Wolfman.
Right.
So they're paying homage to those old films, but they're just not doing a good job of it. And I mean, at the end of the day, there's no heart to this film, right? There's no, like I say, you don't have that moment where you realize, oh, that's the guy that developed Bishop. If you don't recognize the actor, then you don't, it's just a neat idea somebody had. Oh, let's put Lance Henriksen in it. You know, the film ends with one of the facehuggers has attached itself to the Predator, and he pops out as this sort of morphed half Predator, half alien thing comes out of his chest. And you're like, oh, well, that's a neat idea, but nothing gets done with it. And it's not, I mean, it feels like a Saturday morning cartoon version of what it could be. And I mean, again, not all the ideas are terrible, but the execution is just not there.
Have you seen AVP Requiem?
Nope.
Yeah, I haven't either. I've steered very clear of that, because despite all of the negativity I heard around AVP, like, I heard that Requiem is just such trash that
I've heard it's actually significantly worse. So yeah. Again, I won't comment on it because I haven't seen it, but I just felt, I mean, even this film, okay, so I'm still complaining. I'm not done yet, it turns out. The queen alien comes out at the end, and she's going to fight, right? And we get this sort of weird build-up to it. And it is, conceptually, it's like, okay, they've been fighting the xenomorphs, they've been killing them all, now here comes the queen. But at any point in time, did you at all think that either A, were you scared for the characters' lives at that point, either that Predator, did you care whether he was going to die, or our main female character there, were you scared for her? I know I wasn't. And also, did you really care that queen was coming? Or was it just a moment of, hey, here's something even bigger for the final scene? Like, it just felt like a paint-by-numbers kind of idea. Like, we already used these two colors. Now what happens if we mix these two colors together?
No, because the whole thing with the queen honestly really kind of confused me, because, we'll pick this apart. There's several scenes that I can point to, but like, so it starts off, she's chained up or somehow, you know, shackled in this pyramid, but right, also seems to be kind of comatose. Well, when the humans first come in, they step on some little tile that somehow wakes her up. I'm assuming it's because then when the Predators come in, that's what causes her to wake up. So they've rigged this so that then she can start laying eggs and they can have their thing to hunt. All right, I get that. But like, it doesn't seem like it's very difficult at all for her to break free. There's a couple of xenomorphs that kind of make it down there. Their little acid spit is more than enough to kind of break her free. So it was such an easy task that it just made me think, like, well, was she really restrained to begin with? And if it was that easy to break out, then does she do this every time the predators come every 100 years? Because if so, then, well, why do we care at all? Like, there was no buildup to it. It really confused me. And by the time she came out, this is where, you know, my biggest criticism of the movie did come. You had already come full force, so I think I mostly checked out. But I like the image of the xenomorph. I like the image of a predator. What I like about xenomorphs is that they're so snake-like and like stalking and hide in the shadows, and you know, they're sneaky. In this thing, they're doing fucking ninja backflips and flying through the air slow motion style. Like,
yeah,
went to such an action set piece kind of thing that I was so taken out of. Like, and that's really reinforced my feeling that this was another script that they just put these two races in here. And so when the queen showed up, it was the same thing. Like, in my mind, the queen should be this gigantic thing that can barely move because she's so big. But if she got anywhere near you, like, you're dead. And she's, you know, as dexterous and nimble as, you know, anything else out there. And it's, you know, it was very distracting by that point.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, to be honest, the film had lost me by that point. So I didn't care. But everything you're saying is still accurate. I mean, it's not a good representation of these known beings.
Right.
But I think it's important to note that it's not a good film regardless, right? You referenced like slow motion, and all I can think is, oh my God, how many times did this film use slow motion to try to prove how cool everything was? And I'd forgotten to bring that up, you know, in my complaining. I can't believe there's stuff I missed. But
yeah, see, to me, the queen should almost be similar to like the monster in Cloverfield, where it's the kind of thing where you only ever see bits and pieces of it. But even if you do get a full body shot of the whole thing, it's blurry, it's obscured, and you're still not sure what the thing looks like. Like, that's how the queen should be my personal opinion. But yet in this one, like, she's out there full force running and doing her flips and all this kind of stuff. And it was ridiculous, but.
And it really was just a case of, hey, we had queens in the previous one. We have to have a queen here too. It was unnecessary. And it was just, I don't know. I just couldn't imagine that. If you go back and you watch those first couple of Alien films that are quite good, that anyone want this to be the way they're depicted in the future.
Well, and that's why I have to imagine that, you know, and I don't know, but I would think that most of the people that were, you know, the keys involved in the Alien franchise probably had very little, you know, consultation in this, you know.
I would think so.
Because there's just, like I said, and this is kind of that, you know, nerd rage that was going to come out, but like, there's just very little of this that is true to what Alien is, other than, hey, we got the look, but, you know, hey, go buy a single Alien comic or go buy the DVD and look at the back of the box and you could get everything you needed to make this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree with that. It is just, they're throwing the iconography at you. Here's the eggs. Here's the face huggers. Here's the xenomorphs. Here's the queen. They're throwing that at you, but they're not giving you a true representation of it. They're just giving you the picture of it.
Right.
It's like a child telling you the story later on and not getting all the details right.
Yep, pretty much. So I think we're pretty clear where we come down on this one. I was definitely a little more positive than you, but not in the this is a good movie kind of way. It was the kind of
you're positive, but not in a way that makes this a good movie.
Well, it's I feel really conflicted and really hard to put my thoughts into words. But like I said, if you're watching this because you're a fan of Alien, or if you're watching this because you're a fan of Predator, you're not going to be happy. If you just want a sci-fi action movie and don't really care about the plot, and it's on that same line, if you like the Resident Evil movies, well, here's a sci-fi version and it might, you know, work for you. And I can definitely see the appeal on kind of a, I'm not wanting to think about a movie. I just want to see aliens fight. Like,
yeah, it kind of works there.
Yeah, and I'm going to, again, I'll just reiterate, I think putting aside the fact that this film is not respectful to the previous franchises, there's an interesting concept here. The ideas are not terrible, and the execution is just not there to make those ideas. Nothing feels like it matters in this film. I don't care when a single character dies. I don't care when the Predator finally marks up our main character. That should be a really powerful moment, and it could be in a well-made film, and it's simply not here. I don't understand why this movie is taking place on Earth. I don't understand why it's taking place in 2004. Nothing about this really ended up working for me, and I tried my best to just say, okay, put everything else aside. I didn't watch Predator. I didn't watch Alien. I'm just going to sit down and watch this as a standalone film and try to appreciate it as a fun action-y type movie, and I still couldn't. So
yeah, that's fair. Like I said off the bat, like, I absolutely understand criticisms, and I don't think any criticism that I've ever heard of this movie is unfounded. So I'm definitely going to respect your opinion there and say, yeah, I think it's earned for sure.
Okay.
So, well, any last-minute things you want to talk about Tremors 4, AVP, or the Tremors or Aliens franchise or Predator franchise in general?
Just those three franchises or these two movies? No, I think we're good. You know, at the end of the day, I recommend pretty much all of the Alien movies, even though it's been a while since I saw some of them. I recommend the three Predator movies. Even though it's been a while since I saw them, I recommend staying away from this one.
I've actually only seen Predator. I've never seen two or any. I didn't see the remake, so it's. I was always definitely a bigger Alien fan than a Predator fan, but.
Alien, at least the first Alien film, is the only one in either series that is really a horror.
True.
So, and I mean, it is a straightforward, it's a slasher in outer space, mm-hmm. Back when slashers were meant to be scary, so.
Slasher with a flamethrower.
Of course.
All right, well, I say we take a little break here, do a little bit of fan mail, and wrap up for tonight.
Perfect.
You get more out of life when you go out to a movie.
Oh, the time is now, the time is here. Now's the time for a bite of cheer. A tasty life where the price is right. Well, look at here, you'll dig the sight. The moment's handy for a piece of candy. Just name your brand, they're all so grand. Hey, what do you think of a nice cool drink? Or a big box filled with a popcorn thrill? Let's taste Bud's meat with an ice cream treat. Refresh yourselves, it's time to eat. So come on, folks, let's join the band as we all head for the refreshment stand.
You're listening to the Last Horrorcast podcast. Your feedback is always welcome. If you would like to be a part of the show, send us an email at thelasthorrorcast@gmail.com or leave a voicemail at 206-600-9711. You can also keep in touch through our Facebook page or by leaving comments at our website. That's www.thelasthorrorcast.com. Thanks again for listening, and now we'll get back to the show. All right, so we got two emails this week. First one we got here is a reply from Alan, who, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that he was actually the one who suggested the theme for a couple of weeks ago where we did this 1970s satanic films. And we weren't terribly positive on the films, and we actually got a voicemail back from him where he kind of felt like he needed to defend himself and defend his picks a little bit. And I think we were pretty clear at that point when we responded to his voicemail that we were definitely not trying to be critical of him or his picks. Like, they didn't work for us, but one of the things we love about horror is that, the fans are great and everybody's got their own tastes, and that's perfectly fine. And so Alan sent us one more final response here, just saying, gentlemen, I love how polite he is. It's
yeah, he's way different from us in that way.
He just says, I thank you for your kind words in your latest podcast. As a result, I have put away my Jonathan Corbis do-it-yourself wax effigies kit and am at peace. In my if my reputation is not in tatters, I would like to suggest two Nordic horrors for your consideration. Sauna, 2008, and Hidden, from 2009. Best wishes, Alan. P.S. If you absolutely must have more Goatman action, look no further, and he has included a link to a YouTube video that I'm sure, Doug, if you haven't watched this already, like, the more...
I know that's directed at you. The more Goatman, the better. And I have to say thank you for bringing to my attention as many Goatmen as possible. So, I mean, way back in the farm, horror episode where we talked about were-sheep, I knew I had love for Goatman, and now I think it's just been confirmed. So,
yeah, I assumed you would get a pretty good kick out of that, but... yeah, had you heard of either of these two Nordic films, Sauna or Hidden?
Yes, I've seen them both. It's been a while. Okay. It's been a while, so I don't want to comment too much on them. But my understanding is that I liked both, if I remember correctly. Sauna, I remember better than Hidden, but
I don't remember if I've heard of Hidden or not. It sounds vaguely familiar. Sauna, I know I've heard of, although I'm certain I haven't seen it. But yeah, that could definitely be an interesting episode there. And no, Alan, you have not completely ruined your reputation. We are more than willing to take another suggestion and go for something else.
Not right away, maybe. We'll put them on the list.
It's out there for sure.
All right.
Okay, so we had one other email this week that we were going to read off real quick. So I don't have it in front of me. So Doug, why don't you take that one?
Yeah, we got an email from somebody who calls himself Condemned001, which I assume is some sort of a forum nickname and not what his parents named him. But I am going to skip most of his email because as much as I appreciate reading about how great we are, I feel very arrogant when I read those parts on the air. So thank you for your kind comments, but I'm not going to speak them out loud.
Yes, it was very flattering and we're very appreciative, but yeah, don't want to sound too.
Yeah, I'm
back patty.
I don't want to blush on mic, you know. But the what I wanted to get at from in his emails, he brings up a movie called Digging Up the Marrow and requests that we do a discussion of it. And I knew the name, but I wasn't very familiar with it. So I clicked over to Wikipedia and searched it. It's a movie where Adam Green plays himself and. Basically, he's a documentarian making a story about monsters, and Ray Wise shows up. I don't think Ray Wise plays himself. He plays a fictional character, but he basically tells this documentarian, I can prove to you that monsters are real. There's a much deeper plot description on Wikipedia. I'm not reading it because we're totally doing this movie. That's sounds amazing. I definitely want to discuss it, so we're going to have to get to we're going to have to get to it one of these days.
Yeah, you had a pretty good suggestion for a potential theme that could work in. And that might not be too far in our future here.
It might be in 2 weeks. So we'll have to see if we can find copies of Digging Up the Marrow, how easy that is to find. But yeah, it's not going to be long before I watch this movie and I'm going to want to talk about it, I think. So
yeah, I would be in agreement with that for sure. So. We got one more email here that I want to just make a real quick, brief mention of. This is from Joseph, and basically, Joseph just wrote
he called us out on our bullshit.
Right. He basically emailed us and asked basically if we actually ever checked the website, because every week we mention the website and how you can leave comments over there and what a great place it is to do so, and he basically emailed in and said, "Hey guys, what the hell? Like, I leave a comment almost every episode and no acknowledgement." So I have already emailed Joe back and said, my apologies for sure. Like, the website is a little bit slower in terms of its buildup, the response in the community. We absolutely read the comments that are over there. I encourage all listeners to go check out the website, make comments and leave them there. If, you know, you're not on Facebook or don't want to use the Facebook, it is another option. And Joe, rest assured, I do read every one of them, and I will make an effort to start acknowledging them on the episode or on the shows as well, because your comments are not any less important than the emails. So that is completely my fault. I take responsibility for that, and you are still loved.
And for my part, I just want to say that I probably won't read the comments on the website, but when Scott brings them up on the show, I'll try to reply in some way. Because
I will not sit in dead silence.
I have been meaning to go to the website and read whatever comments pop up, and I never do. So I don't want to lie to people and say I'm going to start, but, you know, I know I should, and I feel bad about it, if that helps.
Well, there you go, both. You get love from me, at least.
Yeah.
All right, so that was all the feedback we got this week. No voicemails. Before we kind of wrap up and move on to next week's topic, I did want to say that I've continued this new little trend that I've started where, I forget if it was last week or 2 weeks ago that I did this, but recently discovered that on Hulu Plus, there is a section where you can watch trailers, but you can also see all of the, you know, what they consider released this week trailers. And I'm having a hell of a good time doing it because I admittedly am kind of out of the loop when it comes to new release horror, especially things that are being released on video on demand or coming out on DVD that were straight to video. So considering for the show, most of what we do is things that have been out for a while, I do kind of want to keep myself up on what's out there. And so again, last night I went to Hulu and kind of just watched all of the trailers for anything that was horror or tangential horror. And there were actually three that were being considered released this week. And I got to say, nothing that I'm too terribly excited about, but I'll throw them out there just to keep people interested if you're kind of on the fence about what's coming out. But apparently Pride and Prejudice and Zombies is a new release that just came out on February 5th. So tomorrow that'll be coming out. Okay. And it's a really pretty trailer. Definitely doesn't seem like anything that I'm interested in, but it's a very over-stylized, looks like it probably has a decent amount of humor, but the tone is really kind of hard to put my finger on, like what kind of movie or what kind of audience this is going for.
Oh, that's interesting, because that movie has been in the works for a long time, and I've been looking forward to it, but I hadn't seen the trailer yet, so.
Yeah, it would be worth checking out, I think, just because, like I said, I'm really not quite sure what kind of genre this is supposed to be, but I mean, horror definitely, but I don't know. It's just go watch it.
Yeah.
Second one that came out a couple of days ago is this new werewolf movie, Uncaged. Have you heard of that one at all?
No, but I'm always interested in a werewolf movie. Does it look good?
Oh, well, I couldn't find an actual trailer, but I did get to see a clip, which you've got a couple of characters that in the scene that I saw, they basically had the one kid who has, you know, been turned as a werewolf, and he knows that he's a werewolf, and him and his buddy, and I couldn't tell who the actor was that played his buddy, but it looked like McLovin from Superbad, if you remember that from years ago, and it might be him. I couldn't quite tell, but so they're basically driving in the woods in the middle of the night, the moon's out, and all you can tell is they've got this cage strapped up to the back of the truck, and the one guy is getting ready to climb in there because he knows that he's going to turn, but there was just this really funny dialogue between the two of them where it really seemed like kind of two best friends that just happen to know, like, yeah, well, of course you're a werewolf, and like, here's what it is, but they're arguing, like, mythology and whether it's evil to be a wolf. Like, I mean, yeah, you kill things, but you don't know what you're doing. It'd be like if you threw the Hulk in a church, like, he's just gonna break things, like, that doesn't make him evil. Like, but it seemed like the kind of thing where the dialogue would be pretty funny, and this might be a pretty good movie for fans of the genre.
That's interesting. I think I'll have to check that one out. I should start asking you about these trailers in advance and actually watching them so I can discuss them intelligently on the show.
Well, like I said, this is only the second week I've thought about this, so I think I like it enough that maybe I'll, you know, be organized enough next week to forewarn you.
I doubt it.
How about that? We could actually plan something ahead of time.
Hey, we already picked the movies.
That's true. Well, I should say that I did kind of plan the third trailer here because I posted it on Facebook yesterday, I believe, when I made a joke that maybe we should be doing Farm Animal Part 2.
Yeah.
Because I saw a trailer for a new movie called Rams. Now, did you?
I saw it. I actually saw it while I was at work, and I'm like, well, I can't watch that at my cubicle. I'm gonna get myself in trouble. So I've been meaning to get to it, and I haven't.
From the IMDb date here, it actually came out last May, but it was released in Iceland. I'm guessing just came over to the States now, but. Yeah. Yeah, foreign language movie, the comedy is very, very thick. And it almost seemed like if you took Black Sheep, but if it were directed by, like, the Coen brothers, maybe.
Okay. Because
it's got almost, like, a drama tone to it. Definite dark comedy, like, that's just super thick.
Well, I am a fan of Icelandic comedic horror films, so... Meaning I've seen one and I enjoyed it. So I'll watch another one.
Yeah, there was something about it's these two brothers and one of them, they seem like they were estranged. And one of them has to go over to kind of help his brother because his flock is starting to go crazy or has some disease or some sort of rabies or something. But it definitely led to the killer ram, killer sheep thing, but in a more dramatic comedic
that way. Sounds almost exactly like Black Sheep.
Yeah, except without the like overt comedy. Like this is the much more subtle dark comedy, but I think could be worth watching for sure.
All right, well, we'll see if that gets wide release. Maybe we can both see it in theaters before one of the recordings or something.
Maybe.
probably not.
Well, the challenge now is that I see these movies, I think, oh, that would be cool to see. And then it's a matter of putting it in a list and keeping that somewhere where I actually remember to look at it in a month when some of these actually are available. And that's where I kind of fall apart.
Yeah. Well, a month is a long time to plan ahead.
Okay. So speaking of planning ahead and picking movies that have been on our to-do list, our theme for next week, we're kind of taking another approach like we did. It's been a few months now since we did the Spotlight on Doug episode where you got basically free reign of the episode and got to pick two movies that have been on your to-do list. And we're kind of doing the same thing again now, but this week it's my turn.
Oh, God. keep in mind, I did a pretty good job. My picks were Ex Machina and Snowpiercer, which was a pretty strong episode, I think.
Ex Machina for sure is one of the best films we've reviewed on the show. Snowpiercer, not my favorite.
Well, let's see if you can be one for two next week. History suggests possibly otherwise.
All right, so the two picks that I've decided to go with for next episode are actually both films from 2014. I've known about them probably since about that time, just haven't managed to get around to it. But one of them is a movie that was released in March 2014 called Spring. You aware of that one?
I am aware. That has actually been on my to watch list as well. So
okay, well, you're
off to a decent start.
And my second pick, also from 2014, was The Signal. Now, I know we've seen several movies that have that same title, so this is the Lawrence Fishburne one.
Lawrence Fishburne's okay, and I don't think I'm familiar with this one.
It's a sci-fi thriller, is how it's listed on IMDb. I know that it's kind of been described to me as a very just mind-trippy, screw-with-your-head kind of film, so maybe don't be half asleep when you decide to watch this one.
I'll see what I can do.
All right, so Spring and The Signal for next week. These are just kind of cleaning out my closet, getting rid of a couple movies that have been on my to-do list for a while, and finally have an opportunity to get to it.
All right, and we'll find out whether there's still a podcast after that based on your ability to pick them. So, I think Spring is supposed to be quite good. So The Signal is one I've not heard of at all. let's see what happens.
All right. Well, I'm going to go in blind, so we'll hope for the best.
Perfect.
All right. Any other things you want to get out there, or tell the listeners, or just get off your chest in general?
Well, you know what? There's something I wanted to mention. I debated not bringing it up, but every time I go to log into my Yahoo email address, I see the same story pop up, which is that controversial movie gets banned 7 years after release. So the movie Antichrist has apparently been banned in France now.
And really?
I don't know exactly what that means, what banned means. From the story that I've read, it looks like they're not allowed to distribute it in any way. So I don't imagine that that means they're going around confiscating existing copies, more so that they're just not allowed to sell more or whatever.
Right.
But man, it eats away at me, the concept that it's 2016 and we're still banning movies.
Mm-hmm.
I totally understand the need for ratings. I know the need to keep a movie, especially a movie like Antichrist that I saw once and will never watch again. I know why we need to keep that out of the hands of kids, and I totally understand, but fuck, adults should be allowed to watch whatever they want if they choose to watch it. It's not up to the government to tell us what we can watch and what we can't. Gotta hate censorship.
Yeah, I have to agree, and it's funny because it does seem like the kind of thing that we've outgrown, but yeah, I feel like every 4 or 5 years there's another example of something that pops up, and once again, in a world that you would think has moved past that, it still happens. And what was the one in, was it England? Like maybe 5 years ago, the Grotesque, was that
yes.
the one?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, if people who know me from my past life, we did a horror, et cetera, about that, and I rant and raved about how frustrating it was that even though I'm watching the movie and I feel like, yeah, everything they said about the movie was correct. It had very little redeemable value. It's not up to the government to decide that nobody should be allowed to watch it. You know, let us make that decision.
Well, and it's funny, too, that there are, you know, multiple sides to this. And yes, I'll come down, you know, very strongly and affirmatively that this is wrong. Like you shouldn't, like you said, there shouldn't be censorship. There should not be things that are just flat out disallowed. I don't agree with that. In this particular case where you're talking about Antichrist, which I have not seen it. I know everything about it, so I'm well aware of the content, and the story and everything else. But what makes this one so unique is that here in the States, like, it is a Criterion Collection, and you can take that for what you will. Like, some people believe that has more significance than others do. But there's no denying the fact that there's at least some body that, you know, believes that this is true art and deserves this, you know, masterful release and to be given this somewhat prestigious title. So
yeah,
it's not like we're talking about something like, you know, the next Saw film or, you know, just kind of very specific genre kind of trash movies. Like, this is something that to at least a group of people is art. And so that does kind of add an extra element of intrigue to that particular pick being banned.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, when we had the feedback last week about Satanic Horror, we ended on the notion of, you know, one person's trash is another person's treasure. It as long as, you know, it's consenting adults making the film, and as long as it's consenting adults watching the film, it's not up to somebody else to decide what we should or shouldn't be allowed to see. Warnings, fine. Keeping it out of the hands of kids, sure. But it just drives me nuts.
I would be interested, if you still have access to the article, post a link of it or something on Facebook, because I'm sure the listeners would be interested to read it. I sure would be, because I would also, I mean, I can guess, but I would be curious to see what kind of their reasonings were for the banning. Like, you know,
well, I mean,
specifically,
yeah,
like, why that one and not all of the other films that kind of have the same similar things.
Yeah. I mean, I've seen it. It doesn't surprise me that if somebody's going to pick a movie, it would be this one. It does sort of surprise me that they're going back and reexamining their original ratings of it, which I guess I'm sort of surprised by the notion that they do that. But I don't know. Maybe that's more common in France than I could think of.
Yeah, I wonder too, and you've read the article, I haven't, but like whether this is just this movie was banned or here's a whole list of movies and we're just going to put this one on the top of the list and use it in the headline because that's the one people know, you know, but you know, similar to the whole video nasty thing, like, yeah, that was a whole list of movies that were all, you know, arguably terrible and nobody liked until you read down and saw like, oh wait, there's an Evil Dead movie in here. And, oh wait, there's The Exorcist. Like,
and that is the, that's the key when it comes to these discussions on censorship is always like, because very often I'll be talking to somebody who's not, you know, not one of us, who doesn't watch these more obscure films. And you'll say, yeah, they banned these movies, so what? They'll so what? And I'll go into my walk-in closet where I keep my movie collection and I'll bring out movies and I'll say, this one was banned, this one was banned. This, you know, it's not nothing. It when you start banning movies, when somebody else starts deciding what is and isn't okay, then you have this problem of, yeah, like, you say, why should Evil Dead be banned just because a few people decided they don't like
it? Right.
I get frustrated.
Yeah, it's understandable, and I'm right there with you, so I don't want to get too worked up without reading the article, so yeah, post that for us so we can all read it. I'd be very interested to do so.
All right. I'll make it a point to do that as soon as we're done recording.
Alrighty.
All right. Well,
is that all you got for us tonight then?
Yeah, that's all. I ranted about a movie, I ranted about censorship. Yeah, that's all I got.
you're done for now.
Apparently I'm angry this week. I didn't realize that until now. But
well, you keep your composure very well, I must say.
I'm just Canadian, and you're used to American anger. So.
Well, you haven't offered me a donut yet.
So. not sure what to tell you.
All right. Well, I would say that until next week, I'm Scott.
I'm Doug.
And you have been listening to The Last Horrorcast.